Wendigo? River Shoulders waved a hand. General term, spirit of hunger, can't ever be sated. Ah, gotcha. Now, Barrowill. He had his father tell him that this was how it had to be. That it had to be that way to make him a good vampire. So this thing that turned him into a murdering monster is actually a good thing. He spends his whole life trying to convince himself of that. River nodded slowly. What happens when his child does something differently? I felt like a moron. It means that what his father told him was a lie. It means that maybe he didn't have to be like he is. It means that he's been lying to himself about everything. River Shoulders spread his hands, palm up, as if presenting the fact. That kind of father has to make his children in his own image. He has to make the lie true. He has to make sure Connie kills Erwin, I said. We've got to get him out of there, maybe both of them. How? River Shoulders said. She doesn't know. He only knows a little. Neither knows enough to be wise enough to run. They shouldn't have to run, I growled. Avoiding a fight is always better than not avoiding one. Disagree, I said. Some fights should be sought out and fought and won. River Shoulders shook his head. Your father's gone. I sensed a deep current of resistance in River Shoulders on this subject, one that I would never be able to bridge, I suspected. River just wasn't a fighter. Would you agree it was wisest if they both fled? In this case, it might, yeah. But I think it would only delay the confrontation. Guys like Barrowill have long arms. If he obsesses over it, he'll find them sooner or later. I have no right to take his child from him, River Shoulders said. I am only interested in Erwin. Well, I'm not going to be able to separate them, I said. Erwin nearly started swinging at me when I went anywhere close to that subject. I paused and added, but he might listen to you. River Shoulders shook his head. He's right. I got no right to walk in and smash his life to splinters after being so far away so long. He'd never listen to me. He's got a lot of anger in him, maybe for good reasons. You're his father, I said. That might carry more weight than you think. I should not have involved you in this, he said. I apologize for that, wizard. You should go. Let me sort this out on my own. I eyed River Shoulders. The big guy was powerful, sure, but he was also slow. He took his time making decisions. He played things out with enormous patience. He was clearly ambivalent over what kind of involvement he should have with his son. It might take him months of observation and cogitation to make a choice. Most of us don't live that way. I was sure Barrowill didn't. If the vampire was moving, he might be moving now, like right now. In this particular instance, River Shoulders, you are not thinking clearly, I said. Action must be taken soon, preferably tonight. I will be what I am, River said firmly. I stood up from the log and nodded. Okay, I said. Me too. I put in a call to my fellow warden, Wild Bill Myers, in Dallas, but got an answering service. I left a message that I was in Norman and needed his help, but I had little faith that he'd show up in time. The real downside to being a wizard is that we void the warranties of anything technological every time we sneeze. Cell phones are worse than useless in our hands, and it makes communications a challenge at times, though that was far from the only possible obstacle. If Bill was in, he'd have picked up his phone. He had a big area for his beat and likely had problems of his own. But since Dallas was only 3 hours away, assuming his car didn't break down, I could hold out hope that he might roll in by morning. So I got in my busted-up old Volkswagen, picked up a prop, and drove up to the campus alone. I parked somewhere where I would probably get a ticket. I planned to ignore it. Anarchists have a much easier time finding parking spots. I got out and walked toward one of the smaller dorm buildings on campus. I didn't have my wizard's staff with me, on account of how weird it looked to walk around with one, but my blasting rod was hanging from its tie inside my leather duster. I doubted I would need it, but better to have it and not need it than the other way around. I got my prop and trudged across a short bit of turquoise-tinted grass to the honors dorms where Irwin lived. They were tiny for that campus, maybe 5 stories, with the building laid out in 4 right-angled halls like a plus sign. The door was locked. There's always that kind of security in a dorm building these days. I rapped on the glass with my knuckles until a passing student noticed. I held up a cardboard box from the local Pizza Express and tried to look like I needed a break. I needn't have tried so hard. The kid's eyes were bloodshot and glassy. He was baked on something. He opened the door for me without blinking. "Thanks."
"No problem," he said.
"He was supposed to meet me at the doors," I said. "You see a guy named, I checked the receipt that was taped to the box. Irwin Pounder?"
"Pounder, huh," the kid said. "He'll be in his room, 4th floor, south hall, 3rd door on the left. Just listen for the noise."
"Music?" he tittered.
"Not exactly."
I thanked him and ambled up the stairs, which were getting to be a lot harder on my knees than they used to be. Maybe I needed orthopedic shoes or something. I got to the 2nd floor before I felt it. There was a tension in the air, something that made my heart speed up and my skin feel hot. A few steps later, I started breathing faster and louder. It wasn't until I got to the 3rd floor that I remembered that the most dangerous aspect of a psychic assault is that the victim almost never realizes that it's actually happening. I stopped and threw up my mental defenses in a sudden panic, and the surge of adrenaline and fear suddenly overcame the tremors of restless need that I'd been feeling. The air was thick with psychic power of a nature I'd experienced once before back in the Wraith Deeps. That was when Lara Wraith had unleashed the full force of her come-hither against her own father, the White King, drowning his mind in imposed lust and desire to please her. He'd been her puppet ever since. This was the same form of attack, though there were subtle differences. It had to be Barrowwill. He'd moved even faster than I'd feared. I kept my mental shields up as I picked up my pace. By the time I reached the 4th floor, I heard the noise the amiable toker had mentioned. It was sex. Loud sex. A lot of it. I dropped the pizza and drew my blasting rod. It took me about 5 seconds to realize what was happening. Barrowwill must have been pushing Connie, psychically, forcing her to continue feeding and feeding after she would normally have stopped. He wanted her to kill Irwin, like a good little vampire, and the overflow was spilling out into the entire building. Not that it takes much to make college kids interested in sex, but in this instance, they had literally gone wild. When I looked down the 4 hallways, doors were standing wide open, couples and, well, the only word that really applied was clusters of kids were in the act, some of them right out in the hall. Imagine an act of lust. It was going on in at least 2 of those 4 hallways. I turned down Irwin's hall, channeling my will into my blasting rod, and yes, I'm aware of the Freudian irony here.